Traditional methods of discipleship are slipping or have completely collapsed. So writes Alan White, who is an author who has served on staff of some churches and written a new book called Exponential Groups, Unleashing Your Church's Potential. The website, by the way, for the book is exponentialgroupsbook.com. Alan, good to have you on the program. Thank you for joining us.
Jerry, thank you so much for having me.
Sure. Okay, so first of all, give us an overview. What is this book, Exponential Groups, all about?
You know, it actually comes out of a lot of my experience over the last 20 years of launching groups. And it's really built on a lot of frustration.
Well, wait. First of all, when you say groups, you're talking about like Bible studies, men's groups, women's groups, prayer groups. Is that what you mean, that kind of thing? Cell groups within churches?
I actually go very broad with the definition. I would even include Sunday school classes. I think anything that's built on a Bible study, I'm very traditional, maybe a little old school that way. I think it needs to be built on a Bible study. There needs to be discussion involved. There needs to be care involved. I mean, basically a place for the church to practice the one another's.
Okay. All right. Very good. All right. So how did this book develop?
Well, I can never find enough leaders to lead enough groups to accommodate all of the people that were in our church, because I felt like this was a good experience for us. And both churches I served were on the large side, were growing, and you could never keep pace with the growth of the weekend worship attendance. But then I began to realize as I was going through this that we would, you know, recruit a leader and train them, and hopefully they would consent to leading a group at that point. Some of them did not. And what I began to realize is that people didn't consider themselves to be leaders, and yet they had a lot of leadership ability. They just didn't call it that.
Hmm.
Like, I would challenge people to gather a group of people and do a Bible study together. So I didn't use the word leader. I didn't use the word group. And they were able to do that. And then I turn around and say, guess what? You're actually a small group leader.
Hmm.
And you didn't even know it. And, of course, in that there's training, there's coaching, there's some direction on the curriculum. We didn't just throw caution to the wind.
So, basically, they help facilitate it, even if they're not a teacher, per se.
Mm-hmm. And what we discovered was that we could train people on how to lead the group meeting. We could train them on group dynamics. What we couldn't train them to do was to have the relational ability and the heart to actually invite and include other people. So if they had that, then we knew we could start from there and begin to train them so they could develop all of the, you know, what we would regard as being a trained leader in our church. And it had maybe reached the conclusion that, in reality, everyone is already in a group of some sort. We're in a family, we're in a neighborhood, we're in a group of friends, we're in a workplace. And I really began to expand that definition of leadership and groups. And it kind of dawned on me one day that we really just need to give people something intentional to do about their spiritual growth in the group that they're already part of.
Hmm. What does the title mean, or especially the first word, exponential?
You know, the idea of addition, I felt, was kind of back in the day when I would personally recruit group leaders, and a lot of it had to do with I didn't know any better. Part of it had to do with I wanted to keep control of the thing. So I had to deal with that issue on my own. So that was kind of addition. Multiplication was the idea that all of these leaders would identify an apprentice in their group and train up that apprentice. And some places have gotten that to work very, very well. I didn't get it to work hardly at all. Hmm. But that was the idea of multiplication. And then we talk about dividing groups and birthing groups. And to be honest with you, American churches, people like to stay in the group they have. And so you might as well, instead of calling it multiplying, you might as well call it getting a small group divorce, because that's kind of what it feels like to them. And so a lot of these plans I stumbled in, and maybe some of the things I didn't execute well, but other things I just found were not working to the degree that I needed them to, considering, you know, the rapid growth of our church. So getting to this idea of exponential was, no longer looking at our congregation saying, these folks are sheep without a shepherd. I need to provide a leader for them. I need to connect them into groups, realizing they were already connected to people. And some of them weren't going to forsake their friends in order to be in a group of people they didn't know. So the light bulb kind of went on and thought, well, these people have friends. They could do this study with their friends. The idea of exponential is when you look at a congregation, do you see an audience or do you see an army? Because if you see an audience, you have to have a performance to keep an audience. They have to be, you know, quote unquote, entertained. But if you see an army needs to be equipped and empowered to go out and gather people that they know and make disciples.
You know, it's interesting, too, though, when you talk about trying to expand and taking a group that's already successful and then maybe cutting it into two so that it will develop two new groups and get larger and so forth, each one individually getting larger, that kind of thing. There is a fascinating article in a Norwegian newspaper. My wife is from Norway, and her whole family still lives there, and they did a newspaper article about it's really a Bible group, but the newspaper called it a sewing group of these women, and they're all centered around a church. But again, the way the secular newspaper from Norway described it was like a sewing group. But these women had literally been meeting, including my mother-in-law, since the 1950s. And they had a photograph of them back in the 1950s, and then they had a photograph of today. It was about a year ago. And it was an amazing thing, but it was, boy, talk about the power of a group. These are people that know each other, have known each other all these years. They've prayed for each other, and they've undergirded and helped each other. And you know, my wife, I'm sure indirectly, has grown a lot of strength just from that one group. But it's just, to me, it's like a model of a great group. Although I wish the newspaper had said, hey, this was a Bible group, it was a prayer group, and they did sewing as well.
That's interesting. Yeah, and I am a big fan of continuity in groups, because I it becomes part of your extended family. It becomes your support.
It does.
You know, people that they love you, but they're not impressed with you. And so if you're on the wrong, you know, train of thought, if you're worried about something that seems ridiculous, they'll actually tell you, there's no sense in worrying about that. That's not a problem. And you know that they love you. I think that's a great thing. And I would love to see everybody have that. But the idea of, you know, giving that up and, you know, I'm going to go help another group that started, sometimes that's tough. And so I found that new people tend to do better in new groups anyway. And so I try to recruit, you know, as many leaders as I can, or, you know, not even calling them leaders, for them to gather a new group of people, whether newcomers to the church or people that they know in the community, and begin to start out so they can begin to develop those sorts of relationships. Because sociologically, it's difficult. Now, I will have, and I will admit this, sometimes I've allowed groups to get themselves into a bit of trouble in that some people are really good at inviting and including people to the point that they have 25, 35 people in their house, which, you know, they get to a point something's got to give. That's just too many people.
Yeah.
Well, the first thing they have to do, of course, is to subgroup, because everybody needs an opportunity to get their word in. And
right.
So if there are more than 8 people, they need the subgroup. And then when the leader comes to me and says, I have all of these people coming to my house and all of their children, and this is too much, I said, well, what do you think you should do? They said, well, we think maybe we should spin off another group.
Sure.
I said, you do, huh? So I wanted to become, I'm helping them solve their problem. Mm-hmm. They're not helping me solve my problem of multiplying groups.
Well, it's almost like we can get a clue here from biology, where you see the cell, when it gets a certain level, it will split and duplicate itself, but it becomes two, and then the two become four. I forgot what that's all called, but I remember that from biology class. You use a phrase, decentralizing discipleship is the future. Can you explain that?
Yeah, you know, the church I grew up in, you know, we attended Sunday school on Sunday morning. We had a Sunday morning service, we had a Sunday night service, we had a midweek Bible study. And if I remember right, If you hit all of those, that was the guaranteed pathway to heaven. We struggle with a lot of what I call eternal insecurity in that setting. But anyway, it was a lot of meetings. It was a lot of information. And yet what I find is that in a lot of situations, churches do not have the property to have enough classes to accommodate their people. And yet the reality is, in most churches, they have actually millions and millions of dollars worth of property in the homes of their members. And so I don't think we can't put a lid on how many people we can disciple based on the available space in the church building. The last church I served at was a very large church, had a very large campus, 6,500 people in attendance, and we had every room on campus filled 6 nights of the week.
Awesome.
This Friday night, everybody was checked out with football. But anyway, and we got to a point where there were no more rooms available, and yet we didn't have everybody connected into groups. So we began to say, we're going to do these groups. We don't have any space on campus, but would you do these in the home? And they found out a way to do it, have it in their home, have it in a break room at work, have it in a coffee shop. And so really, that, to me, that's what I'm saying, that the future is decentralized. And I have nothing against, you know, on-site groups, classes, Sunday school class. I have nothing against any of that. I think that can all function very, very well. And if it's working in a church, for a group of people, let it work for that group of people. But I think for a church to fully fulfill the vision of discipling their members, I think that they have to have more leaders, they have to have more available space, and begin to focus in that direction.
All right. Some people have been talking about millennials leaving church, you know, as a general trend, and that does seem to be somewhat of a trend. How does small groups possibly help solve that problem?
You know, what I'm reading and hearing about millennials is that they're drawn toward genuineness and authenticity. Now, I know we all are, but it's a higher value for them than some of the large-scale worship services and worship events that were more attractive to boomers. And so we really have a bit of a generational thing, and just like the boomers way back when were bucking up against the traditional service, well, now we have millennials that are needing a shift from where the boomers have enjoyed being in that place. And so even the thoughts of, I heard Carrie Newhoff say this recently, that warm is the new cool, that they're not looking at highly produced worship services. They're looking at something that's warm and welcoming and laid back and, you know, to overuse the word authentic, those sorts of things. And I came across a saying, it was actually from a marketing firm, and it said that people used to be born into communities and had to discover their individuality. And today people are born individuals and have to discover their community. Mm. And I think that's very appropriate for the mindset of the millennials.
And how can churches basically reach their community through communities, if you will?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. I have a friend of mine in Ohio, and he and his wife are they're probably in their late 50s, and they have a group of about 30 millennials that meet at their house. And their secret to success is that they cook dinner for these millennials. And you involve food, and they all come over, and they have a great time, and they have their small group. Now, the small group is on the large side.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the idea of reaching community through community is that if you have a group in your home and cars pull up on a certain night of the week, neighbors are going to wonder what's going on over at that house on Tuesday night.
Yeah.
And then as, you know, as the people that are leading a group, they begin to serve their neighbors, help their neighbors, pray for their neighbors, then you could have neighbors beginning to attend a group. And we've had a significant number of people, both in churches I've served as well as churches I've coached, that have people participating in groups within the church's small group system, and yet they have never darkened the door of a church.
Wow. Isn't that interesting? And on that note, we'll end. But thank you so much for joining us. ExponentialGroupsBook.com by Alan White, who's been with us on Vocal Point. Thank you, Alan. All the best to you.
Thank you very much.
All right. God bless. Bye-bye.